podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
When you're drinking a frozen beverage from McDonald's, your brain may not like how refreshingly cold it is, but the rest of your body, oh yes, it's gonna relish every moment of it. Because there are drinks, then there are drinks from McDonald's.
Get all the chill you need for just $1.69 from any size frozen drink, like a frozen Fanta Blue Raspberry, to a new ice cold lemonade. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Hello, listeners. Foot Economist is here with me, and let's see whether I can first time this intro. This is the Foot Weekly podcast on Foothead and all your usual podcast platforms. We're going to be discussing a new delay fixing patch, a very merry Footmas, which involves some interesting SBCs, the massive impact of untradeable rewards on SBCs, icons, when to buy, Footmas leaks, and much more. And that's despite me needing to do a quicker pod because I got loads of work on. So, Jamie, you managed to make it home just in time for those Footmas festivities.
I'm finally home from school for the break, and yeah, it's good to be home. Excited to grind a little bit of FIFA.
Yeah, and the big thing actually that's happened apart from Footmas over this past week or so is the fact that we have a console patch which is going to hopefully clear up some of the network issues people have been having with delay, etc. There's some suggestion this is to do with compensating between connections. Jamie, do you want to explain a bit more about that?
Yeah, so as I understand it, this was a big thing that was something that when I played Call of Duty when I was younger, I semi-competitively played Call of Duty. Mm. And this was something that I sort of dealt with a lot in that community, because there's this thing called lag compensation, which when you are going, like, so there's one, in Call of Duty, there's like one central host, there's like one player who has a host connection, and then going to all those different, like, from that person's one host, everyone else like connects into the game through that person's connection. Mm. And if one person's I don't know exactly how it worked, but basically if people's connections that were all connecting to that host were bad, then it sort of brought everybody's connection down just a little bit, so that it felt fair, I suppose, or it created more of a level playing ground, which, you know, if you're developing a game for a more casual audience, makes a lot of sense, right? Because you're going to have a lot of people that are playing on Wi-Fi. I mean, we know that, you know, I did a poll a couple weeks back, and we've talked about this before on the pod, but, you know, 24,000 people voted in that, and out of 24,000 people, 12,000 of those people were playing on Wi-Fi. Mm. And, you know, as we've discussed before here, playing on Wi-Fi, while at times can be very good, especially recently, well, in the past couple of years with how far Wi-Fi has come, and in its reliability and its, you know, sort of the ping that you can get from it is much better than it used to be, but compared to a wired connection, it's nowhere near what the consistency and especially the ping. The ping is a big thing. That's the thing that I think most people get upset about sometimes, is when they experience input lag, is because their ping goes to the roof for whatever reason for a couple seconds or a stretch of the game.
Yeah.
And that's really frustrating. So when, like, I guess as I understand it, maybe I'm totally wrong off base here, and maybe it would be helpful if we could have someone here in the future that really understands this kind of stuff, but as I understand it, if one of the player's connections was poor in the game, it sort of both brought you down to a level where, you know, maybe sort of like you played down, if you will, to the connection-wise, to that the player that had the worst connection, so that it was, I guess, quote-unquote, fair.
Yeah. And so EA have mentioned in their pitch note that they are looking very seriously at the problem of delay in the community, and in the game changer side of things, and I'm sure, Jamie, you can echo this, that there is a lot of talk about it, a lot of feedback goes to EA about delay and things, and so they are looking at it very seriously, and I guess this came up when they were testing to try and work out what had been causing delay. And personally, as someone who experiences very good gameplay maybe 60-70% of the time, but then in those other sort of 30%, I guess, of games, I would have delay, sort of a bit of button delay, nothing too major, but it would seriously throw off my game. And so I think in terms of those kind of issues, that's what the patch is looking to fix. But I know, Jamie, you were playing on a connection which was a little bit suspect, and probably you're the kind of person who wouldn't be positively impacted by this so much.
Right, yeah. So before I moved apartment, so last year, I was playing on a Wi-Fi connection because I really had no option. I couldn't get an Ethernet. I would have to run like a 400-foot Ethernet or something crazy like that. Mm. And we'd have to do like renovations. We'd have to drill a hole in a wall. It just wasn't going to work, especially since I was only living there for a year. So I was playing on Wi-Fi, and it was pretty dodgy Wi-Fi. And honestly, I think I adapted to playing on input delay. Like, I think I just got used to it, because almost, I would imagine, like, almost every single game, I was, you know, playing with input delay. So in a weird sort of roundabout way, I imagine that I was actually at an advantage when I was playing against people who had generally better connections, because they weren't used to playing sort of on a delay, which is kind of interesting.
If this compensation was happening, your opponent could have been experiencing delay. When normally, like say, if we'd played each other, I guess, obviously, playing across the Atlantic, that would not have, wouldn't have gone well, as we tried once or twice.
Right.
But obviously, if we were in the same city or whatever, but our connections were very different quality, it may have been bringing down the quality of my connection, and therefore that's going to disadvantage me, because you're going to be quite used to playing on a dodgy connection, essentially.
And you might be thinking, like, well, you know, if both people have bad connection, then that's just, like, sort of the game, you know, sort of how it works, right? Like, then, you know, then that's no issue, then you sort of have to deal with it, right? Which, to an extent, is true, to be fair. But, you know, there are certain play styles that definitely cater towards having bad connection, which is something that I don't know if too many people sort of, like, considers. Like, you know, last year especially, you know, for people that were our longtime listeners of the pod, will know that my play style last year was perfectly catered towards bad connection. Mm. I like used and abused the shielding mechanic last year and how powerful it was, especially in the beginning of the game, and would basically pass it up to my striker, who's usually big bodied, like an Higuain or like an Icardi. Mm. I would use the shielding mechanic. I would let my strikers make a run through, and then I would basically do a through ball. And it worked really, really well. And it didn't take a whole lot of like intricate sort of timed flicks of the left stick to do, you know, crazy, you know, in intricate dribbling mechanics or dribbling moves, which I think is something that would be much harder to do on a laggy connection.
And doesn't rely on a lot of like accurate passing either, which I think is one of the biggest complaints with delay connections.
You know, yeah, right. So exactly. So if in a situation where I was pulling the connection of another player down, I think I probably had a leg up. Now this year, obviously, my connection situation is a little bit different, and I am playing on a wired connection. And to be fair, sort of interestingly, on a wired connection, I would sort of presumably should have very good connection, and it might be because I'm playing on like a, I don't know, maybe a college campus or in an area that is sort of like urban. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that I'm playing people that are closer to me or have better connection, but I don't know. I don't know about you, Ben. You said that, you know, clearly in the beginning of the episode here that you have poor connections sometimes, but I don't feel that I often have delay. Mm. Like, I don't noticeably have delay that often. And when I do, it's like really, really overtly bad, and I can tell like, oh, I just got a spike in connection for whatever reason. Maybe the servers had trouble, but like, you know, I'll see like my game like freeze like in frames, right? Like I'll be like, oh, there's some lag, but I don't necessarily notice the input delay, which is really strange.
Mm. So the interesting thing that that made me realize that I think this was an issue is I started to try and play a little bit of offline to compare the experience, if that makes sense. So to try and test it a little bit, I was like, oh, this game feels not so great. Or just generally, you know, you have those situations where you pass it and your player kind of misses the ball, or you don't feel like things are quite working as you'd expect, which sometimes is because your opponent's a very good player and you're not, which does obviously happen. But what I do is go into an offline match, basically, and just check that I was feeling what I thought I was feeling, and generally the offline match did feel way smoother. And
that's really because I don't play any offline, so I wouldn't be able to compare it, which is an interesting point. Maybe I'm just so used to having delay and adapting to delay.
I honestly think that a lot of people who don't have variable connection issues probably just have slight delay constantly, or they happen to connect with people with really good connections as well, and it's all quite smooth, which is, I guess, possible, depending on... I know people on PC tend to say that the connection is better because most people are playing on wired, so there are some interesting kind of niches within the community which probably have better connection. And I think a lot of people who play Division 1, Michael Foot PC, we've had on before, has said that because he's playing on PC in Division 1, he actually has really good connection most of the time playing those games. Right. But then it's in Weekend League where he's playing people who are, I guess, lower quality players in terms of ability who aren't so committed, who you'd then have trouble playing, which kind of totally checks out with what EA think they've found and how to fix it. And we should, I do want to caveat this whole thing with neither of us are kind of networking professionals, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So
yeah.
Our knowledge of this may be slightly flawed, but obviously we have picked up plenty over the past couple of years of being involved in creating Foot content and from different people. And also, I do have a few people in mind who I'd like to get on to have a a more knowledgeable technical discussion at a level where we can understand, hopefully, and we can try and do that and make it a bit more broad in its scope. And also the other thing is that it's great if people message in and tell us how they found things, because actually, again, we're only two people who have used maybe, or you've used a few different connections. I've used one or two different connections to play, but it's really not a huge amount of playerbase.
Right. One thing that is going to be interesting is how the community reacts to this, because I think this is probably going to affect different areas in different ways and different types of users in different ways. And it's sort of, there's two paths to go down or explore. The first is, you know, the people that have bad connection maybe don't know that they have bad connection, or, you know, like they're not going to see a difference, and they're going to sort of obviously continue to
feel. And actually, in a way, they might find it harder, because if their opponent isn't being compensated, if that makes sense, then they're going to find their opponent is free to kind of play as they were normally playing, and they're not. So yeah, that's true. Those people are going to be quite badly affected by it, essentially.
And then the second group is the people that have high latency because they are maybe far away from a server, right? So like, how does it work now if one person's very far away from a server and has high latency to that server, or like a dedicated server, right, that, you know, both of you are connecting to, and the other person is like close to the server and has, you know, low latency, right, and has a very good connection to it, and maybe I'm sort of messing up some of the technicalities there, but, you know, does that mean that that one person that's like far away from a server or living in a remote area is going to struggle now, like sort of forever, because in every single game that they get into, because now, you know, if they're facing someone who's closer to the server that, you know, they're you know, playing with, are they going to struggle every single time now? Or, you know, how is that going to affect people in, like, sort of some of the countries that, you know, like South America, I know, complains about their servers all the time. You know, does EA have, you know, weaker servers in South America? That's something that I, you know, don't think we'll ever really know for sure, but unless they sort of gave us, like, a heat map of where they have all their servers.
I suppose there is a suspicion, just on anecdotal evidence, that players who are in Italy and in Spain and South America, certainly, and other parts of the world, do struggle in terms of their connection, and it seems like too widespread to be just individuals having a poor connection, if that makes sense. One thing that I would say on this, though, is the thing that this isn't going to fix, I guess, is there are lots of people out there who, unfortunately, their ISP does throttle their connection at peak times, and they may be experiencing really good gameplay when they're playing off peak, but actually when they're playing at peak times, the gameplay isn't so good. And the problem with this is that there's actually some interesting stuff about a website called Speedtest, I think it's .net or something, that you can test your ping and all that kind of stuff on. We're actually going to sue some ISPs, because when you do a speed test, the internet service provider can actually notice that you're doing that and then give you access to their full bandwidth. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's pretty manipulative.
Yeah. So like, things like speed tests are not necessarily going to give you a very good gauge of how your internet is at that time. So if you're getting lag on a Friday night and you go and do a speed test as you're playing, you're not going to actually get a very accurate reading, because it's quite possible that your ISP is just opening up bandwidth to the speed test.
Yeah. You know, one thing I think they should do, EA that is, would be to add an option to see latency. I mean, most competitive games that I know, I mean, Battlefield even does that, right? So EA has the ability, because Battlefield being a game that EA makes, you would assume that you could, you know, EA Sports FIFA could, you know, knock on the door of DICE and be like, hey, DICE, you know, how do you do that for Battlefield?
Yeah. Right? I don't think it's like a how-to-do-it issue as much as maybe, you know, how in shooting games it's like really common. It's just in the game and it's a thing. Where, you know, FIFA, it's a bit different. There's a lot of casual gamers who play FIFA fairly seriously who aren't that familiar with other games, I suppose. But that said, ping by number rather than bars would be really, really good. On that, though, I think we're ready to move on. We've got plenty more coming, including When to Buy from the Foot Economist, a David Hare review, some festive Footmas action.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree.
Just in case you missed it last week, you'll be pleased to hear we're giving you a present for Christmas. Well, not quite, but we are doing our first ever pod giveaway. Yeah, I know it's been 3 years and we haven't done one, but no better time than the present. We're giving away a present in the form of your choice of two incredible Art of Football prints. If you Google Art of Football and click on the first result, you'll see loads of fantastic prints. All you have to do is email footweekly@mail.com. Some of you may have emailed your questions into that address before, but for those who haven't, that's footweekly@mail.com, so not Gmail, mail.com. Do check out the other giveaway on Twitter as well. And as a gift to everyone who listens to the Foot Weekly podcast, they've agreed to give 15% off exclusively to our listeners. That's 15% using the code FOOTPOD on their website to buy any of their tees, jumpers, loads more. So if you don't quite get what you wanted for Christmas, then just quick sell that link set and invest in a tee of Messi breaking Boateng's ankles. And of course, don't forget to enter that giveaway, Art of Football to footweekly at mail.com, and have a very Merry Christmas.
What's up, guys? This is Andy AJ Free, and you're listening to the Foot Weekly podcast.
Hello, and welcome back, listeners, after the break. And Jamie, are you proud of being part of what is probably the earliest break in Foot Weekly history?
You know, I don't know if we should be proud of it, but it's certainly a record. Yeah. And setting records is always fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're all about here at the Foot Weekly podcast. Setting records. Right. And actually, record highs for prices of Footmas items this year, I'd say.
Yeah, and they're expensive, right? It's interesting how they've priced some of them. And, you know, I get some of the arguments of, you know, the reasons that they might be expensive. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that people have untradeable rivals rewards in their clubs.
Sorry, just to interrupt a sec. Obviously, there is this thing that the market and demand sets the price, right? Supply and demand. But
right.
Is it fair to say that these SBCs haven't pushed up the prices of those, like 83s, 84s, enough to kind of suggest that it is the market that's setting the price? It is more likely that it is just roughly base level of those cards that is setting the price, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, so if EA wanted to, right, like, they could easily make these cheaper. Like, is that what you're driving
at? Yeah,
like,
yeah, I'm saying, like, it's not the market that's setting the price there, is it? It is EA in these.
Yeah, well, I mean, also, you're right in the sense that for some of the lower-rated ones. Well, even with, like, some of the higher-rated runs, too, like, you have, you know, 87 through, you know, 90-rated cards have risen, like, a lot, you know, 20-30%. So there is like sort of a market dynamic there that's, you know, that's setting the price. But I think some of the reason that those high rated cards are maybe being used is because people have, again, like, sort of those untradeable division rivals rewards already in their club. And, you know, maybe they didn't pack like an 88 and that was like the last thing that they needed to go buy, and maybe that's the reason that they're higher. I don't know, maybe I'm reaching a bit there.
Obviously the icon SBCs would also be a factor in raising the price of the top end by that much,
right? Yeah, that's fair.
But then I suppose the lower end doesn't feel like it's risen a huge amount.
And so, to be fair, though, like, I think a lot of it has to do with a couple things. I just don't know if there's the same amount of demand for these as there was last year. Maybe I'm looking sort of back at last year with rose-tinted glasses, which we are prone to doing in sort of really anything. But I think especially in the FIFA community, looking back at previous promotions. But a lot of these have been, you know, sort of like, as some examples, right? Like, you know, an Iniesta that was released, you know, aside from sentimental value, I don't think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be completing an Iniesta. And to be fair, there's a fair number of those last year, but you also have like a Balotelli who was, you know, arguably outclassed by sort of really anyone that played his position, aside from maybe if he was like the second tier striker in an Italian squad, you could maybe make the argument that he was better than an Immobile. But, like, you know, he's sort of hindered and crippled by his poor stamina and maybe some of his work rates. And
the big thing for me is actually his reactions. They're below 70, which for a striker is just, you know,
right.
You need those reactions.
And, you know, sort of there's also like other, you know, they released a left wing Rashford. They released a left wing striker Son, which, you know, to be fair to EA is sort of where they play, I guess, or at least where their base card is. So, you know, you could make the argument, well, then, yeah, that makes sense in terms of what they've done in the previous years, where they haven't done position change cards for Footmas. But, you know, because the Premier League has so many left wings, you just don't need another one. Plus, another thing that's, I guess, different this year is you have the UCL cards. So for a lot of the higher rated cards, you know, for like a Khedira or for a Son, you have this, I guess you can call it a quote-unquote special card already that has similar stats. To be fair, they have given some decent boosts to the informs, or sorry, the SBCs compared to the UCLs, but you could get this sort of discounted special item for much cheaper. And also, I mean, all that said, there were a couple that I think were decent value for money. For example, the two Swiss guys, the Akanjia and Zakaria, I think were all right. And there's a couple ones, I believe, on the first day. A lot of people did Torreya as well.
Wait, so you think? Akanjia was good value? I thought he was like 100K or something.
He was 100K. So this is a really, really interesting debate that I had, and I really liked having this debate with people on Twitter. If you looked at a lot of his stats, his agility, his balance, his pace and his acceleration were phenomenal. Like some of the best first time.
I think this is a really interesting point, and I totally agree with you because he does have some outstanding stats.
Right,
he's got like really good ball playing stats, 85 short passing, and his pace is like mid 90s. So you're totally right. He's got a few issues, like his interception is 86. Right. Aggression is only 72, which isn't like that great for a centre-back. This is with Shadow, I should say, yeah. So I don't know. And obviously, bear in mind that if you want to boost his aggression, you're probably reducing his interceptions even further. So he has got like a floor as such, and he's medium, and like, I don't know.
Which is totally valid. Plus, 95K for an 82-rated card, if he had an inform, it wouldn't be anywhere near that price. But yeah. I think the argument was... is if you're making a Bundesliga squad, I think he's arguably the second best center back. If you didn't do the UCL TA or the Europa League TA SBC, or sorry, the Daily Objective. Well, actually, it was an SBC as well.
Well, actually, yeah, and also to be fair, I've used that UCL TA, and some people rave about him, but I can't deal with him. I've watched other ones.
Yeah, some of
he's not very agile. He doesn't have good balance. He's really hard to maneuver. So I think this could be one of the best centre backs in the league. You're right.
Right, yeah. So if you're making a Bundesliga squad, it's basically a question of how much you're willing to pay for the second best Bundesliga center back. And honestly, you could I know it's a bit of a stretch, but I think you can honestly make the argument that he's better than Boateng. Boateng this year is just not what it was last year.
I think for the same reason as Tar, he's just not mobile. Like,
you know, obviously he doesn't have the links, but I think you could genuinely make the argument that he was one of the best center backs. Anyway, moving on from that, I think just overall, once again, maybe we're looking at back at rose tinted glasses at last year, but. Sort of those combination of factors, I think, contributed to maybe making some of these SBCs sort of the price, the fact that we have a lot of very good substitute goods in the positions that they're released, the fact that a lot of people have untradeable cards that they can use in their club, so they're willing to go out and pay for maybe some of those higher-rated cards just to fill them in. And then you have to consider, so if people are using untradeables, well, they can't make it too cheap, right? Because then everyone's going to do them. Mm-hmm. Is that a problem? I don't know. But maybe EA does see it as a problem because if they make it way too cheap and people can just get them done for virtually... Well, here's the thing, right? Like, the tricky thing about pricing SBCs as if, people are going to have at least 30K worth of value in the club when they do this is, well, what if you didn't take untradeable division rivals rewards, or what if you don't play division rivals? Maybe the argument is, well, you should be playing division rivals, but how does that sort of value proposition work out? Because you are forfeiting value when you take untradeable rivals rewards. I guess maybe going forward, the thing would be if they continue pricing SBCs like this is, well, you just got to take untradeable division rivals rewards because you have a better chance of packing something, and especially if you don't trade, right? And the coins aren't valuable to you in the short term in the sense that you could take those coins and invest them in things, then I think you're probably going to end up, especially if they keep doing SBCs priced the way that they are, I think you're going to have a better store of value, or at least a decent store of value with a very high upside of packing something nice if you take untradeable division rivals rewards.
I think untradeable rivals rewards from EA are perhaps genius on their part, because if you think that EA want people to buy packs, ultimately that's their goal, reducing their buying power continuously. Because if you think the replacement was, say, divisions, which was giving you coins constantly, you're now in a situation where a huge percentage of the player base are locking themselves into untradeables rather than having coins, which means when big promotions come and, say, team of the group stage, for example, and you have to use coins to buy players, people are actually left with loads of untradeables but no coins, if that makes sense. Right. And that might be one of the reasons why you've seen such big prices for tradable pack rewards, like from SBCs. So with the Sancho being so high, because people have these untradeable items and they want to, but they need to convert them into coins.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting the way the market's, what would you call it, the club management meta?
The dynamics of play. And it's really, I think you make a good point about people, when you have a very specific requirement, like a German inform, right? You'll see that flies, right? And it might be partially due to the fact that people have, in their clubs, they have stocked a bunch of untradeable, decently high-rated cards. They can put together a relatively high-rated squad and get that out of the way without really going and breaking the bank. And they say, oh, now all I need to buy now is an inform. And they go, well, 70K for a German inform, I can still afford that, or I can foot that bill because I have the rest of it untradeable. And they don't really think about think about the value that I'm turning in here. It's, well, I can't get this value back anyway because I've decided to take Division Rivals Rewards untradeable. So it's sort of this weird sunk cost fallacy kind of playing into play here. It's as you said, it's a very interesting club management.
It's also bizarre because having picked untradeable rivals rewards maybe, a couple of times since the start of the game, I don't see how anyone's getting sort of an 86 squad for Lacazette in that, even if they pick them every week,
So you're not on the red list, is what you're saying?
I'm definitely not on the red list. I'm on the dead list. No, actually, I am on the red list. My red rewards have actually been very good, but apart from that, my rewards have been poor. So, oh, actually, okay, that's a bit of a lie. I did pack Hazard a few weeks ago, but, you know, let's move on from my...
I get it. Yeah, that's true.
I suppose what we're trying to get at here is that there's almost this increasing divergence in the way people are, like, using their coins and using their rewards, if you like. So it makes things kind of interesting when you come to points like this where everyone's looking at the same, to pick up the same items almost, because there are people with lots of untradables, there are people without many untradables, and I suppose that may in a weird sense be making people who have coins stay away from untradable items even more.
Right.
Because certainly someone who has a lot of coins but not many untradable items, the cost of these SBCs has really put me off when I think that there's a team of the week coming this week, or it's out at the moment, right. We can talk about it. These players are not going to be nearly the same price as these untradable rewards, which have a little bit of snow on top.
Right, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And one thing I think that could, before we sort of move on from this point in general too, is, you know, to be fair, like some of these SBCs as well, some of the higher rated ones in particular, you know, why they might not have, or they might not look like the best value, because, you know, for that Katira, right, you're like outright paying what, like 50k or something like that for an 87 rated card. But at the same time, you could turn around and turn that 87 rated card into like an icon SBC for a decent price, which transitioned nicely into another thing that they dropped during this period, which is the icon SBCs. And, or at least another thing sort of notably, is that they've expired icon set number 3 and taken away, aside from Balak, they've taken away the icon requirement, which is taking a lot of pressure off of the baby or the base icon market. It's also, they've dropped the Sol Campbell, and they've dropped the, what's his name? Rui Costa as well, yep. And both of them being relatively cheap has put some pressure, downward pressure, on the prices of the base icons, the baby icons, which I think is something the community has been asking for a while, and it's a good thing, because, you know, you're seeing some more substitute goods coming onto the market, because, you know, people are, you know, some of these icons are starting to get into the range of like affordability again, which is nice to see. And I also think it's nice because a lot of people are like, well, finally, right, because now I can finally, you, like, you know, a lot of people went out and got Balak, a lot of people went out and got Sol Campbell, and it's good to see that sort of that icon market get reinvigorated again. So if there's anything that they did right, the rework to the icon SBC, I hope they continue to do that in the future in the way that they've done them this time, which is individual requirements. I think the prime icon sets made things a little bit messy, especially when you had an icon requirement in it. You know, some of the valuations, it made like only one or two in the set worth it, right? And then like the other one basically got the other two got no love, because, you know, their pricing was just a little bit off. And then we've sort of beaten the dead horse over and over again about what that does to the icon, baby icon market. So won't have to cover that again. But yeah, I think one of the things that they did well was that. And plus, obviously, more to come, right? In terms of things to be, you know, keeping out for on the radar, or keeping an eye out for on the radars. You know, post Christmas last year, they had Team League SBCs. They dropped two of them, in fact. They dropped one for Team League 14 and Team League 15. So as we head into our discussions and hear a little bit about Team League 14, keep that in mind in terms of pricing.
That's a really good point.
There's a decent chance that there's going to be Team League 14 SBC, and we've, you know, especially people that have been through Team League 10 this year and last year will understand what that does to the Team League prices, aka it makes them much cheaper.
Especially at the sort of like mid-range.
Right, exactly.
Especially the mid-range. Also, so going back to icons, I don't think that their intention was to ever do this, and it is good that they've done this, and I think it's a positive move for the market. It's good to see baby icons, or, well, just lower priced icons generally, taking quite a significant drop. But we do have a question here from a gentleman called Alex Mancuso, and he asks, what's the price floor for base icons, assuming no SBC is coming? I'm assuming he means base icon SBC.
Right, yeah. Well, so to maybe answer the first part of the question, I don't think we're going to get a base icon SBC. Just if I was a betting man, I don't think it's coming until much later in the year. We've talked about, I think, on the podcast, the incentives that would disincentivize EA from doing that. So assuming that's not coming, I think the price for, I mean, right now as we're recording this, are somewhere in the range of 600k. I think, you know, they've dropped relatively too recently, three lightweight icons. I think maybe they want to finish strong, or sort of finish on a high note. So maybe I would anticipate that this is sort of one of the cheaper SBCs that we have out right now for the icons, or, you know, these are the cheap ones that we're going to get. With that in mind, I think somewhere in the range of 550 to 600 is probably a decent range to be, you know, considering these guys get down to in terms of like what they are for tradable value. And one thing I think that I see a lot lot of misconceptions about this on Twitter. Is they'll look at the price of the baby icon SBC, someone like a, or sorry, not a baby icon SBC, but like a Sol Campbell, and they'll go, oh, 720K? I mean, why would you just go out and buy the regular icon? We have to remember that you're getting quite a bit of value back from PAX, especially for like that Sol Campbell, because there's no icon requirement. There's quite a bit of opportunity for them to put in PAX, and I haven't done a full analysis on it, but it's somewhere in the range of 50 to 70K worth of value that you're getting in there.
That's minimum, isn't it? That's like, if your PAX are bad.
Yeah. Right, that's like very, very average. Yeah. Especially when you spread out and you're opening up, I think it's like something like 7 packs that are at least 20K in value, you're bound to have a little bit of decent luck, right? Unless you have really, really poor luck. And, the one thing that I think I need to make a little bit more clear about some of my calculations for the SBC values in terms of the resale value of the packs is that it is assuming bare minimum luck, like very poor luck, I think sort of is the par for the course. But if you get lucky on like one of the 100K packs that they're giving you in that Sol Campbell SBC, well, then you're sitting pretty, especially at some of the inflated prices of some of the higher end cards right now. So
yeah, I totally agree.
I think that's something that people have to consider with the icons.
And in terms of looking a bit further kind of forward, we've got Footmas, we're going to have these icon SBCs. But surely if they're releasing the icons individually, we should expect quite a continual stream of icons going forward. Mm. If people are thinking, oh, I'd quite like to do a cheap icon SBC, which does kind of make sense because you can resubmit to a higher tier icon, you would kind of say, well, maybe going forward we might have a fair few more over the coming sort of month or so.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
And with Team of the Year around the corner, potentially, the market may drop a little bit further even.
The dynamics of that could be sort of interesting too, like sort of as sort of like a Black Friday kind of sense, right? Because with the coin infusion that Team of the Year does bring, so there's going to be obviously niches of cards that are going to go actually up during Team of the Year, but you're right. Like, exactly. So the icons could come down a little bit, as especially some of the higher rated ones, which would put pressure on like the ones that are just below them in terms of like the meta lineup, if you will, because guys like Hullet, you're going to have the, oh, well, I can use, Team of the Year Conte, right? So there's going to be substitute goods coming into market, which is sort of like a trickle down, sort of like top down, pushing down prices, which is always, a dynamic that tends to play itself out when you have high level cards being released. And then I guess one more thing I want to say before we move on to a Team League discussion is that one thing that's been really nice about Footmas and like a huge, huge improvement from last year, and this is more so in the community that we, you and I, Ben, and I'm assuming a lot of the listeners to the pod deal with on Twitter, is that there's been no leaks, which has been
it's been fantastic.
A fantastic change, right? Because every day at 6 p.m. you have people excited on Twitter talking about it, and sort of ironically, I think it might have contributed to some of the disappointment because, I mean, let's be honest, right? Misery loves company. And tweeting poorly about EA, bashing on them, just in the nature of the community, it gets more likes, it gets more engagement.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of, again, misery loves company. So maybe that's sort of contributed to some of the sour attitude around some of the releases of these SBCs initially. But I think sort of, when it comes down to like sort of the nitty gritty, I think a lot of people are actually relatively pleased with some of the releases, or at least are doing some of the releases, maybe not publicizing on Twitter.
Yeah, and actually I should say that I know I was being more negative about the pricing of it, but I think in terms of the player selection, like who they've brought out as cards, I mean, you think of Torreira was a good one, and there are plenty of really interesting cards going on at sort of different levels for different people and in different leagues. That I think overall, I'd say it's been positive. And I think, as you say, the leak factor or the lack of leaks for the committed players who are on Twitter a lot and things, it makes such a big difference to come into each day thinking, oh, we don't know what we're going to get. And I think that's really positive. And actually, I want to say that a lot of people think this is something simple, but actually there are a lot of people involved in the process, and leaks are not so easy to stop as you'd think. Think about the fact that EA is a global company, their social media operates throughout the world. Obviously, EA don't have every single language covered in their headquarters, if you think about this logically. So it's not going to be quite as easy as you might think to ensure that nobody gets things ahead of time.
Right, exactly. Another thing too, just one more point on that. It's like, it's been a huge difference as a content creator, especially that creates like sort of like daily content around this kind of stuff. Not having leaks is a big deal.
Definitely. Yeah.
We can get people excited about the daily release, which is a big deal for engagement and viewers, and which is obviously sort of like a trickle down effect, very good for EA, right? Because when you have content creators excited, they create better content. When you create better content, you have people more interested in that content, and by sort of the nature of it, more interested in the game, and engagement rates, I imagine EA are saying, are higher.
And Talking of which, if you want to consume your content for Economist, where would people do that?
Apart from the normal platform of Twitter, which I'm sure most listeners are probably familiar with by now, is on Twitch. I've recently started really picking up my Twitch game. So twitch.com, I think, /footeconomist. There's no underscore on Twitch, which is like the...
Yeah, and I should say, you know, if you haven't had your question answered by us on this podcast, then I'm sure Foot Economist will give you an answer on his stream. So yeah, just go and check
you
out.
Might have to ask an eCoin question though.
Yeah, he has a clever system for asking questions, but just say you're a listener to the Foot Weekly Pod and you love the show, and I'm sure he won't worry about that and he'll answer your question.
Exactly.
But we should get into something else, which has been very good content this week, the team of the week. It is a very, very good team of the week. Just in time for Christmas, with Jesus in there as well. It's just
I knew you were going to make that.
Just so predictable. Let's move on to the team of the week itself. What I love about this team is you've got players like Griezmann, Messi, Gabriel Jesus, Fabinho, Kimmich, Ziyech, Sommer, and Duncan. And I wanted to actually get into Duncan straight away, because I really enjoy it when we can chat about the team of the week on the podcast. And there is genuinely that player for sort of, I don't know, 15K or lower, kind of dynamite discard, I guess, team of the week option. And he looks really, really good. He's in the Serie A, he's gone here, and so he's not fantastic to link. But if you did Boateng's SBC for that flashback card, then you'll be pretty excited, because he gets a perfect link with Boateng, Duncan does. And what is also good about this card is that he's one of those players who's super well-rounded, so he can pass it. He's got 88 short passing. That's, you know, unboosted. But he's also very strong defensively. You're talking, you know, mid-80s for all his... Well, actually, higher than that. You know, he's got high interceptions and sliding tackle, but really good standing tackle marking, etc. with Shadow, and he's really quick. But he's also got a high defensive work rate and medium attacking. And obviously, we talked a lot about work rates, how important they are a few weeks ago. And for me... I was running a Serie A team, he's left-footed as well, catches people out, I'd give him a go. I think he could be, you know, like a fairly dependable option. He's not got the best stamina, actually, 84, but if he's kind of staying back and doing his job defensively, like, I think he could be a really good chap.
Absolutely.
Jamie, I don't know whether there's anyone there that you quite like the look of, whether it's sort of investment or a gameplay perspective.
From a gameplay perspective, I'm interested in that Witzel card. I think especially in the Bundesliga, there's sort of this weird gap in the center mid department. I mean, obviously you have that Renato Sanchez, but he's a bit expensive. You have Goretzka, but I think he's just starting to get past at this point in the game, especially the regular gold Goretzka is starting to, you know, he's starting to feel a little bit lackluster compared to some of the other options that you could be running with. You know, obviously you also have guys like Royce and you know, Götze, but if you didn't do the Götze SBC, and you know, both of them aren't really center mid options, so if you're looking for like an out-and-out center mid and you didn't do the Sakaria card, then yeah, I think that Witzel card could be very, very interesting in terms of a second option, especially with some of the, how, you know, they've been kind to, in Fumus wise, they've been kind to the Bundesliga, so, and sort of as the Bundesliga hype man, it's good to see, you know, cards in the Bundesliga like a Witzel do well. And if you look at some of his stats, I mean, you know, the likes of the, you know, 90 stamina is also, you know, very, very good for a box to box. 88 composure is nice. He's got some decent agility, 83 agility. His balance is the one thing that always throws off cards like Witzel for me. I think one card, like if he gets one more inform, he's going to be an absolute force to be reckoned with.
I know what you mean, actually.
And there's a couple cards like that right now, but
especially as he would get an 86, wouldn't he, as well, which is a really nice upgrade. Skimmed through a load of the players quickly, but Fabinho is quite an interesting one. Potentially a high value item to get as well. And I think people's red rewards are going to be looking really nice. There are lots of high rated cards as well, so, you know, for submitting those into Footmas SBCs, then that's really, really handy, I suppose. And just overall, I think it's a quite nice team. It's even got an 86 on the bench, which is quite rare. And I don't know, Jamie, whether you want to quickly just shout out any players from investment perspectives in this team of the week. They could get very cheap, of course, next week, but I know team of the week 10 a lot of people thought wasn't worth investing in just because there was so much supply. So is that a similar situation this week?
So well, to be fair, there's a couple cards in team of week 10 that did rebound, so it's going to be sort of a case-to-case basis depending on price valuations. And, you know, I think the big thing was taking a look at you know, if there's a card in the short term that, you know, say we get a, I don't know, some sort of center mid, just as an example. Say we get sort of like a center mid Footmas card, and Fabinho is, you know, he's pushed down in price a little bit more when we get that team league SBC, because people are like, well, why would I go get Fabinho if I already have, you know, X card in my, you know, in my club? That, like, long term, when the people, you know, don't have the option to go do that SBC, that they could rebound. And there's a guy, you know, again, there's a couple cards in team league 10 that rebounded even without those kind of factors playing into it. I will also say that team league 10 discard investments didn't do particularly well. Again, because of the sheer supply. So when you're looking at valuations for some of these, just keep that in mind, that long-term, and we are sort of, after this FUTMIS event, we are a ways away from having heavy-hitting SBC requiring SBCs, especially for the lower end, right? Obviously, if they continue in the fashion that they have with the Icon SBCs and requiring some of the higher-rated ones, and we've seen those go up quite a bit, you know, just the supply, the sheer supply of some of these 81s, 82s could be overwhelming.
Yeah. So just to end this week's podcast, I'm going to do a very quick review. It's made quite easy because it's a goalkeeper. I finally got round to building a team which involves David De Gea. It was weird. I happened to like snipe him really cheap when I was checking his price. So I thought, oh, I might as well get him into my team and give him a go. And I've been using Courtois for a long time. I'd used a few inform keepers. Yet again, I think EA are not boosting reactions for goalkeeper special cards, which is obviously really important. Reactions are, as you may have heard in this gameplay producer podcast we did quite early on in the year, reactions would play a key part in how good a keeper is. And De Gea has by far the best reactions of any non-icon keeper, I think, but even keeper in the game. He has 90 reactions. Someone like Courtois, I think, has 85 or 83. So with glove, he has 99 diving, 99 handling, 99 positioning, 94 reflexes, but he's also got 90 reactions. So I think all I'm going to say is he plays as you'd expect for a keeper of his ability. He's not going to feel like an unbeatable keeper. I think it's important to remember that, you know, with how good shooting is, with the boost that attacking players get, you know, it's never going to be a case where De Gea is suddenly incredible. And in fact, almost all keepers, you can boost the 99s with chemistry starts. So it's not quite that amazing. But basically, if you're running a Premier League team, I think he's worth it. And if you're running a team where you can fit him in somehow, I'd do that. I think he's a really good card.
Well, there you have it.
So it's been a bit of a brief podcast, a succinct version of the Foot Weekly podcast. Hopefully, it won't be too long before the next podcast. I can't confirm 100% just because it's Christmas, but I do have a particularly special guest in mind, so we'll see whether that comes off. It's not Santa Claus, although if anyone wants to come on as Santa Claus, feel free. Jamie, thank you very much for joining me. It's been great to have you.
Fun as always, Ben.
Thank you very much, and thank you listeners for joining us for this festive Foot Weekly podcast. See you very soon.
Bye.
Just before you leave us, please do enter our giveaway by emailing footweekly@mail.com. That's footweekly@mail.com with the subject Art of Football, to be entered into a competition to win one of Art of Football's incredible prints. Don't forget, you can also get an exclusive Foot Weekly 15% off with the code FOOTPOD on their website.
At Lowe's, we know you can get the job done faster if you don't have to stop and come into the store all the time. That's why we've updated our app with your business in mind. With the app, you can build quotes, easily reorder your supplies, track orders, and much more. So you can get everything you need right away, stay on the job, finish it, and get started on the next one. Download the app today, because Lowe's knows time is money. Lowe's knows pros.
Finally, playing FIFA can be a frustrating and disheartening experience, and that's a little bit like life, really. And if things are getting you down, then don't worry, because Calm is there. Support from the Campaign Against Living Miserably is available on thecalmzone.net.
At Lowe's, we know you can get the job done faster if you don't have to stop and come into the store all the time. That's why we've updated our app with your business in mind. With the app, you can build quotes, easily reorder your supplies, track orders, and much more. So you can get everything you need right away, stay on the job, finish it, and get started on the next one. Download the app today, because Lowe's knows time is money. Lowe's knows pros.
Sports Social Podcast Network.